I found out last week someone forwarded me an email with a link to a website called kosherswitch.com, and the website announced that there is a new product on the market, or soon to be on the market, that allows you to turn lights on and off on Shabbos, as long as you install this kosher switch instead of your regular light switch. And at first I was very skeptical, and then it had a list of haskamos, of Rabbanim that haskamos from, and there were some very, very, very big names on the list, and it was an extremely long list as well. So I was very intrigued. I basically printed out the entire website and read it over Shabbos, and this is what I've come out with. So I'm just going to try to give a basic overview of the kosher switch. So first of all, in terms of the haskamos can be broken down into three or four categories. The first and longest category are those Rabbanim whose names are there on their list, but if you actually read what they wrote, it's more along the lines of good idea, hatzlacha rabba, less of this is mutter, do it lechatchila, more just, you know, you're a really nice guy, hatzlacha rabba. On the list of rabbis who are more on the you're a nice guy, hatzlacha rabba list are Rav Scheinberg, Rav Sternbach, Rav Neubert from Shmir Shabbos Kolchasa, Rav Zalman Chemi Goldberg, Rav Nebensal, Rav Yaakov Hillel, Rav Aaron Schechter from Chaim Berlin, Rav David Cohn from Brooklyn, Rav David Yosef, Rav Vadya Son. They all write nice things, but not they all stop short of saying, this switch is something that's mutter to use on Shabbos. The second category of people who give haskamos are people who say things that seem to be clear endorsements. They actually say that it's mutter, but they don't write a halachic logic for it. They just say, make a statement that they think it's mutter. On that list, you have Rav Yisrael Belsky, who says that the kosher switch is permissible according to all halachic opinions. You have Rav Zabichi, the author of Shalos Tshuvos HaTeres Paz, a Sfardi posek, who says that ein bazeh shum chashash chil Shabbos chas v'shalom klal v'ikr, that there's no concern of chil Shabbos whatsoever, and that this is going to enable achenu beis Yisrael di b'chal asar v'asar l'shtamish b'chashmal al atzara tov b'yoser, and this is going to allow Klal Yisrael, wherever they are, to use electricity with no problems, lo shum chshash klal v'ikr, with no concerns whatsoever. You also have your Rav Yecheskel Roth of Borough Park, who writes that it's, or who told them, apparently, they quote him as saying it's permitted, not even a grama. So again, that's the second category, clear endorsements. And then the third category are people who wrote actual tshuvos explaining their halachic logic for supporting this invention, and that includes Rav Ben Chaim, great Svardi Rosh HaYeshiva in Yeshiva University, Rav Chaim Tzvi Shapiro, who's a dayan in the Belzer Bezdin and B'nai Brak, who, in my opinion, wrote the best tshuva, the clearest tshuva, and most convincing tshuva on the topic. Rav Yehuda Bracha, who is Rosh Kolol of Yechavadat, one of Rav Vad Yosef's Kololim in Harnov. They all write tshuvas where they clearly support the kosher switch. And then there's a fourth category that's not on the website, and that is the people who aren't on the website, meaning you know that if they have 50 names, they went to everybody. And yet, there are certain names that you'd expect, if you're getting everybody to sign on, who aren't there, which has to give you a little bit of pause, and you have to wonder. We can't be medayik necessarily, but it's at least something to look into. So I right away noticed Rav David Feinstein wasn't there, which wasn't much of a surprise, because Rav Moshe, of course, held that you're not even supposed to use Shabbos clocks beyond where it's already become mekubal, which is for lights. He held you shouldn't use Shabbos clocks for anything else, because he thought it was a zilzal Shabbos, that everything's going to run on Shabbos, so the Shabbos clock's not going to be appropriate for Shabbos. So you would imagine that Rav David would not be excited, that Rav Moshe, son Rav David, would not be excited about this kind of invention. I noticed Rav Asher Weiss was not on the list. I don't know why. I noticed Rav Schechter wasn't on the list. Apparently, though, Rav Schechter was approached by the group who invented this about 5 years ago. They've been working on this for a while. He wasn't satisfied with the product then. They came back to him Pesach time. They called him again this past Pesach. They said they made certain improvements. They want to meet with him again. They just haven't coordinated their schedules yet. So Rav Schechter is not making any public statements, yay or nay, at this point yet. He hasn't yet formulated an opinion. Just as general background, electricity on Shabbos typically is something that we assume to be usur, although Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach in his monumental work on electricity, isn't exactly sure what the Isser is. Chazanish held its bona. Rav Shlomo Zalman disagrees strongly with that idea. And at the very least, use of electricity is at least a minhag that all of Klal Yisrael has accepted, that it's also to use on Shabbos and even Yontif as well. But you should realize that there are certain things that are clearly malacha d'oraisa with electricity. I mean, if you turn on an incandescent bulb, then it's not just about making an electrical circuit, that's making an eish mamish. So that's havara. That there's no question about, really. The question is fluorescent lights, which are becoming more and more popular, LED lights, things of that nature, things that use other forms of electricity. But anyway, this device says it doesn't matter. Regardless what you hold about electricity in general, if you have this device, you're good to go. You can do whatever you want. So how does it work? So it's brilliant. It happens to be, in my opinion, is brilliant. What they have is as follows. Yeah, there's a plastic switch that when you turn it on or off, you just move a piece of plastic. The piece of plastic that you're moving is connected to nothing electrical whatsoever. You're merely moving a piece of plastic. It's like taking this plastic pen and moving it from here to there. I'm not doing anything. There's no buttons. There's nothing underneath that's happening. Just moving a piece of plastic. So how does that work? Because behind that piece of plastic is an electrical eye. And the electronic eye looks for the piece of plastic every 10 to 30 seconds in irregular intervals. It will activate and look for the piece of plastic. If the piece of plastic is there, it will do nothing. If the piece of plastic is not there, because you have moved it already, it will then start to try to make a connection, which will then turn on the light. Now, the 5 seconds before the electronic eye is turned on, a red light goes on the switch to warn you, don't touch me right now, don't try right now, because the electronic eye is about to turn on. So when the green light is on, it's at least 5 seconds away from the electronic eye being activated, so nothing is going on when you move the plastic. You have a guarantee that zero is happening when you move, at the moment that you move the plastic. Now, once the electronic eye sees that the plastic isn't blocking, it needs to make 2 connections in order to activate the light. And each connection that's built into the system, it's a 50-50 chance that the connection will actually be made. Meaning they built it in that there should be a suffix whether it actually works. How does the light turn on then? Because each time it fails, it tries again. So a 50-50 chance that it works the first time. And if it doesn't, it tries again and again and again and again until it works. Theoretically, it's possible the light will never turn on until after Shabbos. Practically, it always turns on within like 30 seconds. So because it keeps on trying over and over again. It has a chol mode and a Shabbos mode. When it's on the chol mode, the eye goes on much more frequently, and there are no warning lights. And also, the light pulse works without a 50% failure. It will work 100% of the time on the chol mode. That's the difference between the chol mode and the Shabbos mode, as far as I understand it. So what's the heter based on? There are basically 2 heterim that are built in that they work with. In my opinion, one of these heterim is very strong. The other heter is extremely weak. But you only really need one heter. One heter revolves around, we'll go with the stronger one first, and it's the one that all of the poskim that wrote tshuvas on focus on, is the idea that not every time a malacha happens am I chayav for doing a malacha. Because the malacha has to be my action. There could be people driving on the street on Shabbos. I don't get punished for that because it's not my action. They're the ones doing it. If a malacha happens by itself, if a fire starts somewhere, but I had nothing to do with it, you could divorce the malacha that happens enough from me, then I'm not going to be chayiv. So there's a concept in halacha called grumma. Grumma means that you very indirectly cause something to happen. The Gemara Misach Shabbos Tav Kuf Chafam Bey says, Pasuk tells us, L'sa'ase kol melacha. So the Gemara Darshins, L'sa'ase, Maisa Aser, Avol Grumma Mutter. That you're not allowed to do a Maisa of Isser on Shabbos, but if it's Grumma, if it's indirect, then it's going to be Mutter. And the Rama in Shin Lamedal, Siv Chaf Beis, says that Grumma is only Mutter, B'makom Hefsid, if there's going to be a major loss. Now, what is Grumma? So the Gemara says that Zora is Aser to do on Shabbos. If you throw up the grains and the wind has to come to do the Zora, so even though you're not making the wind is what's doing the Zora, still it's Aser. And the Rosh says that's an exception only by Zora, but other places, Grumma is going to be Mutter. Rashi has a different approach. He says if you're trying to make it happen, then even if it's Grumma, it's a problem. Fine. Now, over here, what they argue is that this isn't even Grumma. The Shulchan Aruch in Siman Reish Ayin Zayin Sif Aleph says that you should not open a door when there's a candle right in front of the door. And the Mishmur explains that means that when it's not so windy, even if it's not so windy, there's a little bit of a wind, and it's not necessarily going to put out the fire, but you might make a mistake between a smaller wind and a bigger wind, and if you open the door when it's windy outside, even mildly windy, and there's a candle right there, that's a Guram Kibur. You're causing the candle to be extinguished. However, the Ramah writes explicitly, Tavkuf Yudalit Sif Gimel, in Hilchos Yom Tov, that if there's no wind whatsoever, there's nothing going on outside, and you have a candle in front of the door, you are allowed to open up the door, even though later the forecast calls for wind. Right now there's nothing, you're allowed to open up the door. They argue that is exactly what you're doing with the switch. You're moving the piece of plastic, there's nothing going on the other side for at least 5 more seconds. There is zero happening at this point in time. It's not even a grumma. A grumma would be if you turn it on while the electric eye is on, because then you're moving the piece of plastic out of the way and the electric eye is going to be able to make the connection. This isn't even a grumma because you are at the time that you move it, nothing is happening. So Rav Shapira explains that typically the way we would define gram kibui, like for instance the Mishnah in Shabbos gives the example, if you have a fire and you want to put out the fire, so instead of taking water and putting out the fire, that would be kibui mamish, you take barrels of water and you surround the fire with the barrels of water, then when the fire gets to those barrels, it bursts the barrels, the water comes and puts out the water spills out and puts out the fire. That would be gram kibui. Why? Because at least over there you are handling the water. You're touching, you're moving that which is going to put out the fire. Over here, you're not handling that which is being put out, nor that which is doing the putting out. You're not handling the candle, nor are you handling the wind. You're just opening the door. So over here as well, you're not making anything, you're just moving the piece of plastic out of the way, and everything else is happening on its own. The people who developed this point out that if you compare this to Rav Heinemann Shlita's Sabbath mode on the ovens that have become very popular, and a couple of years ago there was a big tumult where people criticized it and thought it wasn't good, say this is much, much better than the Sabbath mode. Why is it much better than the Sabbath mode? In the Sabbath mode, all it does is when you push the keypad, there are no lights, whistles, bells, nothing, no rings, no beeps, no lights, nothing goes, but you are actually interacting with the computer when you push the keypad. You just don't see the interaction. It's not evident to you from the outside. Over here, you're doing nothing. You're moving a piece of plastic. You're not interacting with a computer whatsoever. So it has that great strength over the Sabbath mode. Now, the weakness is that Rabbi Heinemann was just using the Sabbath mode to tell you that you could raise or lower the oven on Yantif, where it's not clear exactly what the Yisr would be anyway. But over here, they're talking about doing a Melacha D'Oraisa on Shabbos. So it's true, their technology is more mutter than the Sabbath mode, but they're trying to use it for something much, much bigger. That's argument number one, and to my mind, the more convincing of the two arguments, that it's not even grumma, and therefore would be mutter. The second argument they have is that it's not a psik ratio that it's going to happen. Why is it not a psik ratio that's going to happen? When you flip the switch, light always turns on within 30 seconds. Since they built in the 50-50 chance of making that connection, so even though it keeps on trying over and over again, it's still not definite that it's going to happen. Let's say you have a woman who has 10 sons and no daughters. Then she gets pregnant an 11th time. What are the chances that the 11th baby is going to be a boy or a girl? 50-50. You keep flipping the coin, and it's no matter how many times you flipped it already, the chances remain 50-50. So therefore, they argue it's not a psik reshe. So this is, to my mind, and what they base themselves on is the yesod of Rav Asher Weiss that Rav Shechter, Mori Rabbi Rav Shechter, strongly disagrees with. Rav Asher Weiss has a yesod that he holds to be very true, that when it comes to halacha, we don't follow statistics. That we follow, when it comes to halacha, we follow dinim of chazakos and sveikos, we don't follow statistics. So even if something is a statistical definite, halachically it doesn't necessarily make it a psik reshe. Rav Asher Weiss's raya is the Gemara Ksuba stuff, daf tesvav and beis, and Mishnah Machshirin talks about if you find a tinok mushlach, if you find an abandoned baby. So what do you assume? Do you assume it's Jewish or non-Jewish? So the halacha is you follow the rove. If 51% of the people in that city are Jewish, you assume that the baby is Jewish. So why do we look at the rove of the city? Why don't we look at women of childbearing years? Why are we looking at 80-year-old women when we're figuring out whether it's Rov Yisrael or Rov Akum? Rav Asher Weiss assumes for a Dover Pashut that you look at everybody, not just women of childbearing years. So if that's statistically, we should only look at the women of childbearing years. Elamai, the halacha doesn't involve statistics. It's a totally different thing. If you find 10 babies in the city, chances are one of them is from the guy, right? It's from one of the guys in the city. It's only 51% Jewish. Still, we view all 10 babies as being Jewish. If you find 10 pieces of meat in front of stores where 9 sell kosher meat and 1 sells non-kosher meat, or let's say 6 sell kosher meat and 4 sell non-kosher meat, so you find 10 pieces of meat, some of them are liable to be from the non-kosher store. No, but we still assume that they're all kosher. Rav Schechter strongly disagrees with that idea. He says, no, of course we follow statistics. If let's say you have 100 cows, and you know that there is a 40% incidence of trefos in cows, and you take the milk of all 100 cows and mix them all together. So you can't point to any cow and say, I know this is a trefa. Each one has a cheskas kashrus, but you know that 40% of the milk in the vat is trefa milk. And therefore, it should be aser. That statistics doesn't make a difference. Let's say the Tinok Mushlach case. You find an African American baby in Crown Heights. Let's assume, I don't know what the numbers are exactly, but let's assume there's 51% Jews in Crown Heights and 49% African Americans, for argument's sake. And you find an African American baby in Crown Heights. You're going to say, oh, Rov Yisrael, so we're going to assume it's Yisrael. No, Rav Shach said it's ridiculous. Obviously, you're going to say if it's an African American baby, so that statistically, the overwhelming chance is that comes from African American parents. So that's not going to be assumed to be a Jewish baby. The other major weakness in their argument is that not being a psik resha doesn't make something mutter. Being a davar she'enu miskavein makes something mutter. If it's enu miskavein and a psik resha, then it's going to be usher, even though it's enu miskavein. But at the very ground level, you first need to be a davar she'enu miskavein. Davar she'enu miskavein means I'm not trying for this result. Right? That's what davar she'enu miskavein means. I open the fridge. I'm not trying to get the light on. I'm just trying to open the fridge. But it's psik resha. The light's going to go on. It's going to be usher anyway. So if you were to take away that psik resha, if I were to install in my fridge a 50-50 chance that the light goes on when I open the door, so you could say it's davar she'enu miskavein, it would be mutter. But over here, I'm trying to turn on the light. That's what you're doing. So I don't know. I pashut don't understand this whole what the whole kula is based on. It's a psik resha. They start with the assumption that if it's not a psik resha, it's automatically mutter. But you're being mechavein to do the malacha. So first of all, it is a psik resha. Because statistically, it's a psik resha. It will never happen that you flip the switch and it doesn't turn on within 30 seconds. And second of all, it's a davar miskavein. The whole discussion doesn't even get off the ground. So until I understand it better, as far as I could tell, that kula doesn't get off the ground. But the first kula seemed like a very strong kula, and that's the one that all the posts can really discuss. What about other more minor problems that are less than issues of? I realize I'm way over time for a 10-minute halacha, but what about other more minor problems that are less than issues of malach? So there are a few other problems that come up. One is muktzah. So first of all, many poskim hold that there's no muktzah by mechubal karka. Second of all, this item, this switch is a klisha malachta le'isr ula heter, and you're allowed to move a klisha malachta le'isr ula heter on Shabbos, because when it's in Sabbath mode, it's mutter to use. When it's in chol mode, you're not supposed to use it. But that means it's used for both mutter and asr purposes. And even if it's a klisha malachta le'isr, you're allowed to move a klisha malachta le'isr l'tzorach gufo makomo. So you could argue that this is l'tzorach gufo. So muktzah doesn't seem to be the biggest issue. Maris ayin is another issue that comes up. So they argue that it says in big letters on the thing, kosher switch. It says it with their logo and everything. So it doesn't look anything like a regular switch, and therefore it's not marasayin. Very similar to what the Shulchan Aruch says, that if you're having par of milk, let's say milk made out of almonds, it talks about, if you have almond peels on the table, you're allowed to have that with meat, and it's not going to be marasayin, because everyone's going to see that the indication that it didn't come from a cow, that it's not real milk. So the same over here. The fact that the logo is on the thing will take away the marasayin problem. Second of all, the way that you turn it on is a significant shinui, from the way you would normally turn on a light. Think about it. Someone walks into a room, looks to see if the green light is there, then turns it on, and nothing happens for at least 5 seconds, probably 10 to 30 seconds, nothing happens, and then it turns on. So that doesn't look like the normal act of turning a light. You would just say, what's going on over here? Very strange. Also, we don't seem to worry about marasayin by Shabbos clocks. So if we're not worried about marasayin by Shabbos clocks, why should we worry about marasayin over here? Now that argument you could take issue with, because by Shabbos clocks you're not doing anything. Over here you're doing something, so maybe there's a stronger marasayin. They also argue in the long tshuva that they wrote, I don't know who wrote it, I don't know who the author of the major tshuva on the topic is that they have on the website, is that when there's a mutter way to do something and an usher way to do something, we typically don't say that it's marasayin to do it in the mutter way. For instance, you're not allowed to cook on Shabbos. You're not allowed to cook tea leaves on Shabbos to make tea. But if you make tea in a kli shlishi or with tea essence, according to the Mishnah Berurah, kli shlishi according to Rav Moshe, maybe even kli sheni according to Rav Chaim, whatever. But you make tea in some other way. We don't say it's asur to do because it's maris ayin. No, it's not asur to do because it's a mutter way to do it. And they say that there are many examples where technology has taken previously forbidden actions and changes in technology have made them mutter. For instance, Gemara says you're not allowed to be kori la'or aner on Shabbos shema yata, lest you tilt the candle. Right, so you can't read by a candlelight. Can you read by an electric light? Of course you can. All the poskim say you can, because even if you tilt it, nothing will happen. The change in technology has made it mutter. Or, for instance, poskim talk about not wearing eyeglasses on Shabbos in the Rosh Hashanah, lest they fall off and you carry them in the Rosh Hashanah. But then they invented these great little things along the sides of the glasses, these handles that go around your ears, that make it that your glasses don't fall off every 2 seconds. Unclear why they didn't invent that when they first invented the eyeglass, but they invented these great little handles that keep them on your face. Now it's mutter to wear your glasses in Rosh Hashanah. On Shabbos, according to almost all poskim, shaving with an electric razor, you know, all these things that would be usher, but technology has made it that it's mutter. They give the example of eating salad. Used to be usher to eat salad, but then Gush Katif came along, it's mutter to eat salad. I don't know if it was ever usher to eat salad, you just had to check for the bugs. I'm not very strange. Okay, but anyway, the next issue they said is Uvda Duchol. So Uvda Duchol is a very difficult concept to define exactly. Chaznish says that Uvda Duchol really depends on the Chacham of each generation to figure out what is and isn't Uvda Duchol. There is a svara out there that maybe Uvda Duchol is anything that is normally done in an usher way. Normally, when you do it normally, it involves malacha. Even if you're doing it on Shabbos without a malacha, it would be Uvda Duchol. If that's the case, maybe this would be a problem. Although you could argue when it's in Sabbath mode, it's never a malacha. You could argue even when it's in Chol mode, it's only a grama, it's not really a malacha. So you could argue that it's not Uvda Duchol, but again, exactly how to define Uvda Duchol is not so clear. Rav Vadi Yosef, for instance, in the Tshuva says that all of the problems with brushing teeth on Shabbos is all mutter. You're allowed to brush your teeth on Shabbos, except for one thing, it's Uvda Duchol. So you need a separate Shabbos toothbrush. So, and the way to get around Uvda Duchol is by having a separate one for Shabbos. So you have this Shabbos switch that has a switch that turns for Shabbos, so you could argue that would solve the problem of Uvda Duchol. The biggest problem, I think, is Zilzul Shabbos. That it's just, come on, this is what Shabbos is going to be like. People are turning on lights and on and off, and they're turning on the dishwasher and the air conditioner, and every electrical appliance in your house, you end up turning on. You're going to be on your iPad, and you could do anything with this switch. Well, the iPad will be hard. I mean, they'd have to have a separate switch for each tap of the screen. I don't know how that. I'm sure they'll work on it. But the question is, where do you draw the line with Zilzul Shabbos? So it's hard to know. It's hard. This is for above my pay grade. This is for the Gedolim to decide. Rav Yehuda Baracha, the Rosh Kol in Yechavadat, says he's staying away from that. You need Gedolim to define that. You need them to figure that out. So I'd like to see what do the Gedolim really have to say. What does Rav Neibert say about that? What does Rav Nevensel say about that? I'd be very curious. The advantages, they argue, some of them are a little humorous. They say that... first of all, Onek Shabbos. It can enhance Onek Shabbos because you turn on lights that you didn't know you needed before Shabbos. And they said it will help in Kiruv because one of the hard things about Kiruv is you tell people to keep Shabbos. I'm not even allowed to turn on a light. My parents are going to think I'm crazy, whatever. So all I have to do is install a Shabbos switch and I'll be allowed to turn on lights and no one will think I'm crazy and it will be much easier to do Kiruv. I don't know how often that's the ma'akev. Turning on lights is the ma'akev in Kiruv, but okay. The other thing they say is Moschil Shabbos, I don't know if they did a study on this, but they say Moschil Shabbos happens with electricity nowadays. And the Gemara in Shabbos Daf Kuf Yud Chesam Beis says all you need to do is for Klal Yisrael to keep two Shabbosos and the Geula is going to come. So if we could solve all the electricity problems, we'll have the Geula. I don't know. I think people still cook on Shabbos. I think people still drive on Shabbos. I think people still do a lot of things on Shabbos that have absolutely nothing to do with electricity. So, I mean, it would help. It certainly would help to have people do less malacha, but I don't know if that's a guarantee that with this switch we're going to necessarily bring the geula. The most humorous suggestion they have is that the Rama Paskins in Hilchos Sukkah, that if someone sits in the sukkah when it's raining outside, he's nikra hediot, because kalapater min adav v'oseh is nikra hediot. If you have something that you pater from and you do it anyway, then you're a fool. So they say here you have a mutter way to turn on lights on Shabbos. If you don't buy it, you're a fool. You're nikra hediot. Chazal criticize you. That's so ridiculous. It doesn't even need a response. I don't think that's ridiculous. If you want a response, I'll give you a shiur later about Nikra Hedyot. I mean, it has nothing to do with Nikra Hedyot. It's absolutely ridiculous. Another advantage they taina is, which is a valid taina, is that, let's say what happens a lot of times, you walk into a room and you accidentally turn on the light on Shabbos. So sometimes you could argue that that's misasek, it's not even shogeg. But sometimes it's really a shogeg, that you knew it was Shabbos, you knew that turning on the light is us, or you just forgot for a second that it was Shabbos, and you turned on the light on Shabbos. Rabbi Yashiv says in most cases, he's quoted in one of the Achronos Shesvarim, obviously Achronos Shesvarim, it's Rabbi Yashiv, you know, is quoted as saying that in Ma'ara Shabbos, that it's that's shogeg on a typical example. Now, you have to write down that you have to bring Karmel Chatas when the Beis Hamikdash is rebuilt. But if you walk into a room, even if you don't hold the Shabbos switch, you turn on light, they don't have to bring Karmel Chatas. At the worst, it's Grum, it's not even that. So you know, at the very least, all you violated was Zilzal Shabbos, you know, you didn't violate anything major. But even better, I was thinking, if you accidentally turn on a light, so what do people typically do right when they accidentally turn on a light? So a lot of times, unfortunately, what people do is they'll immediately accidentally turn it off. So over here, and they just did a second malacha, b'mezid. So over here, if you accidentally turn it on, you could flip the switch down before the light will turn on. Whatever they say, Muhammad Ali would say he's so fast that he could turn off the light and be in bed before the light shuts off. This you could taka do that. You could turn on the light, and before the light actually turns on, you could shut it off. So that's very interesting. That's an interesting advantage. Another advantage they say they have is baltashchis. Why waste all this electricity? Another advantage is shalom bayis. How many fights break out between husbands and wives over the husband messing up the setting on the Shabbos clocks? And that's very true. Everyone nods. Yes, that is very true. This would save shalom bayis problems. That's definitely true. Maybe a factor. Someone came over to me. I spoke about this in shul yesterday. Someone came over to me right afterwards. Says, a guy who doesn't normally daven my shul, but happened to have been there. He says, I have two autistic kids at home. They turn on lights all over the place on Shabbos, in the bedrooms or whatever. So would this be a good solution for me? It could very well be. Could very well, meaning even if you hold the general zilzal Shabbos, but maybe for this kind of situation, maybe that's where this kind of device. If they're only selling to people who have two autistic kids at home, they're not going to make as much money as they plan on making. You know, they're hoping to sell to everybody, but that could very well be. So that could very well be. So final word, 25 minutes into my 10-minute halacha shiur, the final word is that the halachic malacha issues have probably been solved, not because of the sick ratio issue, that I don't think is true at all, but because of the grumma, or the not even grumma, the Zilzal Shabbos issues are up to much bigger people than me, and you know, you can't help but think that Rav Moshe was Chachamein of Barosha when he discouraged the use of Shabbos clocks, that he saw where this was heading, and this is exactly where it was heading, that people are going to just be using all sorts of electric devices all over the house. Now you appreciate Rav Moshe's point of view maybe a little bit more. Okay.